Hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of the Spoolcast. Today, I have with me the amazing, wonderful Teresa Neal. She is going to be teaching a workshop, our first one ever, really, on designing for the brave new world of native apps. It was wonderful to get Teresa on the program because she and her team have been doing some amazing work on building out some really sophisticated and wonderful, delightful native applications. And she knows a lot about what that takes. So we're going to talk about that today and talk about what it takes to make a great native application. Teresa, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Jared.
Teresa will be presenting a day-long workshop at UX Immersion Mobile April 13th through 15th in Salt Lake City. For more information, visit uxim.co.
So you've had some pretty awesome clients working in your little firm. How big is your firm now?
There are about 20 of us, about 12 of us full-time, and then we have a support team that jumps in as needed for prototyping and creative visual design and UI development, but our core team of UX designers is 12.
And you're primarily working on native mobile apps these days. Is that true, or a lot of your work is in that space?
Well, we take a combination of software as a service, B2B projects, B2C, and a number of those companies already have existing either software or web applications, and they've turned to us to either design those or design those with a mobile counterpart. So it's not unusual for us to have projects where we're designing across five or six platforms, most of those being mobile, but there's usually also a web component as well.
And has this been pretty much since you've started, or did you move into mobile over time, or how has the balance shifted?
Yeah, well, I started 14 years ago at Sabre, the airline company.
Yeah, so we're not talking mobile then.
Well, no, actually we were.
Oh, wow.
I was really lucky in the early days of mobile before we had smartphones. I was doing a lot of work in the airline industry for figuring out how people within the airline were using mobile devices to make their job more efficient. So we worked on projects called Curbside, where the man or woman for the airline would actually have a device on their hip that allowed them to check in customers instead of having to make them go through the check-in line. So think of it as kind of a roving agent that would come up to you and help you check in and get your bags loaded up, and you wouldn't have to wait in line in the airport. So that was some of the early mobile work. And then there was also a lot of investigation around how do you display barcodes or boarding passes on the old flip phones so that you could just wave your flip phone in front of a reader and get on the plane instead of having to print out a boarding pass. And I also had the opportunity to work on all types of different platforms that I don't touch much today, like kiosk and wall UI, as well as, of course, you know, your desktop software for managing planes and personnel. And then after doing that for about 5 years, I ended up becoming a consultant. And since then, I've worked in all types of verticals. And there, I guess since 2008, when the iPhone came out, there's been a definite push towards creating a mobile experience in addition to, say, maybe an enterprise tool or a software as a service product. So we do have a lot more mobile work today than we did in 2008.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of people doing amazing mobile work, you always come top of mind. And part of that is because your team has done a fabulous job of really understanding how to think these problems through and look at, you know, what is it we're trying to do, and then how do we make that happen on whatever devices we need to make them happen on, and then what makes the most sense in terms of should this be a website, should this be an app? Those conversations with clients, have they shifted over the years? Or do people come to you telling you what they want and then you say, well, no, that's not really what you want? Or
we have a lot of that. When the iPhone came out, everybody came to us and they're like, we want an app. And if you were in design in 2008, you heard the same thing. It was like, I want an app for the App Store. And, you know, our first question back is, what are you trying to achieve? And a lot of times an app wasn't the right solution. A mobile optimized site may have been the right solution. A responsive web design may have been the right solution. Or some type of cross-platform experience that could include an iPhone app was the right solution. And so it really just depended on the customer. I think the most interesting one that in the early years of the iPhone that we came across was a company came to us and we had designed their product as a pervasive data integration. So it's a really, really complex web application for mapping out processing in order to do data transformation. So very heavy UI in terms of dragging and dropping and charting and graphing flows. And they came and they're like, we want an iPhone app. I was like, oh my gosh, we'd never be able to do what we just did for a web application on an iPhone. That would be completely impractical and doesn't make any sense in terms of, you know, your users would never sit down and try to map out these complex flows on their mobile device. And they said, no, we know that. What we want is a marketing tool. And we think that we can create this little ROI calculator and put it out there. And nobody else in our field has anything in the App Store like this. And if people pull up our ROI calculator and see how much money they can save using our product or a product like it, then it's a really good sales channel for us. I was like, well, that's exactly right. That's exactly how you need to be thinking about coming up and creating an app and putting it out there for your customers or for your prospective customers. So it's very rarely do we want to create a mobile solution that maps one-to-one to an existing piece of software, but it can either enhance it, support it, or act as a sales channel for it. And so I was pretty pleased with their thought process around how to leverage the App Store.
There's a lot of tools and things now because of the sort of explosion of discussion around responsive design and building responsive websites for how to build something that's a web-based solution that's going to be used across all different devices. But one of the things that I've noticed, at least, you know, as I've been trying to answer questions for our clients and put together programs for our conferences, is that the number of people talking about and providing tools and support for cross-device native applications is really limited. You can find some great resources for Android. You can find some great resources for iOS. But it's very hard to find people who talk about both. And then you add Windows Phone into that and, you know, the occasional stillborn Nokia Symbian user. You know, all of those things are still not, it's hard to find people who talk across all these different platforms. And I've been wondering why that is. Is it you don't really need to have that conversation, or is it just that it's too complicated, or is it that nobody's actually, they either do one or the other and they don't know enough to be able to talk about the other thing?
Well, I'm not sure why. I guess my answer would be, I think it's very similar to years ago when everyone was a web designer. You know, if you had FrontPage or Dreamweaver, you were a web designer. And in fact, most of the people that were in the field were doing website design, a very, you know, content-centric, sharing information, low amount of transactions, so very focused on the content. And responsive is all about that, right? It's about how do you get this content across any device at any time to any audience. But there is a small group of us, and it's a growing group, who are focused on software. And when you talk about mobile software, that typically falls into the realm of native applications. And that's not to say that you can't ever make a responsive web application that handles transactions well. However, when you're getting down into software like a project we did recently for Johns Hopkins, it's a tool for birthing attendants and midwives in third world countries to help make sure that more moms and babies live through using the software tool that identifies whether the birth is obstructed. That's not a responsive web solution. These tablets go offline. There's a lot of heavy charting and processing going on in the application. And that type of software, it lends itself towards a native application, one that can be installed on a device and has offline capabilities as well as the capabilities to use other information from the phone that you would not have available in a mobile web solution.
So there are things that the native platforms can do that, even if you had good connectivity through the web, are still hard to do on the website. Is that a shifting space? Is it the case that there are now easier things to do than there used to be in terms of having a web-based platform? Or is it there will always be a certain number of things that the native world will have to account for?
Oh, I think it's shifting. Like a couple of years ago, the only way that you could take a photo and use it within your mobile experiences if you were utilizing a native application or maybe a hybrid app that was wrapped and able to use the camera capabilities. But now with iOS 8, if you're on a mobile site for, say, a retailer that you like to use and you're going to check out, there's the ability to integrate it right into the Safari browser for you to snap a picture of your credit card. So it's definitely shifting. The thing is, our clients that come to us, they need this functionality today. So I can't say, well, that might be in the web, you know, a couple of years down the road. If it's not available now, we have to come up with a solution that can capture that ambient data or integrate with a sensor or integrate with other applications. You know, if that's a requirement for the product, then we need to go ahead and build it natively.
So when a client comes to you and say, we have this idea of something we'd like to put in the hands of our users, how do you start to draw the line between whether it's something that you should definitely go down the road of a native app or it's definitely something that would be best served through some sort of cross-device mobile experience or something that could go either way, but you're not quite sure yet?
Usually we start off with some round of either market research and UX research or simply the UX research to inform how people are going to be or how we think people are going to be using these experiences. So, for example, we're working with a company today that has a healthcare provider application. And even without an extensive amount of research, if you've been to your doctor and your dentist and maybe a chiropractor or an eye doctor, you'll notice that all of those different healthcare providers are using different types of devices. Some of them might be on their laptop, some of them might be on a smartphone, they might be on a Windows tablet or an Android tablet or some unidentifiable tablet. They're all using different types of devices. And a lot of that is because what's being dictated by their hospital or the organization that they're working within. So to say, well, let's create a native application for them to see, let's say, I don't know, patient data, then that seems to me like that would be overkill. We don't actually need to design and develop discrete native applications for all of the different possible platforms that these healthcare providers might have. A responsive web solution would be ideal because they can simply go into their browser and consume this content that's being generated for them. So these read-only views of all the information about their patients. Responsive is a great solution for that. Going native would be very costly and overkill. However, if you were talking about creating a solution for maybe their patients to log information about their medical issues, if you start looking at that and you're able to see, well, okay, most of the people out there in the US are using iPhone and Android, and a native application would be able to take advantage of, say, like some of the notification capabilities on a smartphone, then we start leaning towards, oh, well, the patient solution may be better suited to be a native app, right? So that people could be maybe reminded on a daily basis or, say, be able to chat directly with their healthcare provider. And all of that would, at this point in time, work better as a native application. So that research helps inform which direction we should go technology-wise.
Part of the challenge with all this is really sort of understanding what the use cases are going to be and whether the hardware and the software and the connectivity issues are going to push you in one direction or the other.
Definitely.
So now, when you're looking at this stuff, do you guys approach projects by trying to build out one design that's going to work on every platform and then tailor for the idiosyncrasies of the platform? Or do you say, okay, we're going to do the iPhone version first, and then we're going to do the Android Lollipop version, and then we're going to go do the, you know, how do you decide how to tackle the design detail?
So the way that we start is after we've done our UX research is we map out the customer experience and the workflows within the overarching experience. So we may have a number of different types of users. Like I was talking about, you might have a healthcare provider versus, say, somebody who has maybe a disease or a medical issue that they're having treated. So we look at those different individuals, those personas, and what they're trying to accomplish. And in our experience map, we start to see, well, at what point would these different users need a mobile device versus maybe in front of, say, their desktop or their laptop? And a perfect example of this that you don't see it that often when you're looking at building out, say, a website, an informational or a content-heavy website, would be creating some type of transactional app. For example, one that we were working on that was for a solar plant. So in this application, we have somebody who is in charge of a solar plant, and he has hundreds and thousands of solar panels that he needs to manage. And as we got into developing the personas and the workflows for this, we realized, well, this guy who's in charge, he's almost always in front of his computer. He's in his office, and he's working in both a proactive and reactive mode, and he's got a big monitor in front of him, and this is how he's managing and monitoring everything. But when something goes wrong, he has to dispatch a guy out there to go fix the panel. And that guy's not in front of a computer. In fact, he's almost never in front of a computer. And so we know that when we map out this experience, that we've got the manager in a normal desk work environment, and we have a guy on dispatch who's in a truck. And he's going to need a mobile experience, whereas the manager user is completely fine with, say, a web experience that works well on a desktop or laptop screen. So once we identify the areas where a mobile solution would add a lot of value or may in fact be the only way we want to create an interface, then we start looking at, well, how do we design for these specific platforms for mobile?
So this is interesting, right? Because I thought what you were going to tell me was, well, we figure out what the requirements are from the business owners and we go off and we build the iPhone app first and we build the Android. But what you're saying here is you're taking a step back and you're saying, okay, let's talk about the entire experience of use. And let's talk about the different users and the different things. And different people are going to need to interact with this functionality in different ways with different technology. And so we're going to approach it in a more holistic form instead of just assuming that there's an iPhone app followed by an Android app followed by a Windows phone app.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's one reason that when you asked earlier, like, do you guys just do mobile apps? Well, no, because then we wouldn't be doing our job, because very rarely is an experience consumed solely on a mobile device, at least in my field, right, of working with these companies that they're looking for a software solution. It frequently starts on one device, or the person's experience starts on one device, and then they finish it or continue with it on another device. And so it's rarely just mobile. It might be on the wall and then on the phone. It might be on the phone and then in the car, like in the example of a project that we did with Silvercar, which was one of my favorite projects ever. We set it up.
Who's Silvercar?
Silvercar is a startup in Austin, Texas, and they decided they wanted to reimagine car rental for business travelers.
Oh, cool.
And so they started with a fleet of all silver Audi A4s. And they wanted to remove all of the pain points from business travel, like waiting in lines, all that extra paperwork.
So they're called Silvercar, and then they went out and got silver cars?
Yes.
That's quite a coincidence.
It is. You know what? It makes their marketing and advertising really easy to do.
I bet it does. I bet it. Because if they had gotten red cars and they were called silver cars, people go, what the? No, I get that.
So this is really fun. When we did the research for them, we found out that there are a number of different types of business travelers. So you've got kind of that hardcore business traveler, kind of the grumpy one that you see that they're in a suit and they're kind of grumbly and they give you the evil eye if you're like cutting up and having fun or, you know, pushing around a baby carriage or something. Those folks are typically, when they start off booking their business travel, they're typically at their desk at work and they're using the system that their company provides. So that's almost always starting with a desktop experience. However, they then quickly move into using a mobile device during their actual travel time. But then following travel, after they've picked up their car, they've been on their business trip, they've returned their car, and they're back at their desk. Now they're going into the expense phase, right? So they need the receipt, and all of that's done back on the desktop. So for that type of persona, they're actually going desktop, mobile, desktop.
You're thinking all these things through, and this has all sorts of implications in that it's not so much that the UI that we create on the iPhone, per se, has to feel like an iPhone. It has to feel similar to what I just did on the desktop yesterday, right? Because if it's like two different experiences, then it's like two different companies and I'm lost.
Right. And so our motto is that the UX should be the same across platform, meaning the flow should be consistent and efficient for that customer experience that we mapped up. However, the UI is different per platform. So how we actually lay out the content in the screens and the interactions and the controls are all specific to the device that we're designing for. So for Silvercar, when we created the booking flow, when we did it on the web, it was like booking on the web. When we designed it for iPhone, we used native iPhone controls and experiences and gestures and interaction patterns. And when we designed it for the Android, we used the Android design guidelines. So those interactions, those UI controls, and those patterns, as well as their guidelines around the aesthetics. So the Silvercar iPhone UI and the Silvercar Android UI act the same, but are unique to the platform they were designed for. And if we had done a Windows one, it would have been unique to the Windows navigation paradigms and gestures and UI controls.
That makes a lot of sense. I got a question for you. Google's just come out with this new material design language. Have you guys played with that at all?
Yeah, we're currently working on a project for a company in California called Grokker. They're an expert video network. And this is actually something we're going to incorporate in your workshop in the spring, where we're going to take a look at Grokker, who has a responsive web experience, and then look at how to design that to be a native mobile experience. And there's a lot of different things that we're going to do around that other than just port it one for one from responsive to mobile. And then after we get that design for the iPhone, we're actually going to learn a little bit about the material design guidelines and see how we can design it for Android. And that's something that my team and I are working on now, is creating their material design for the Grokker application.
That's really cool.
Oh, it is so cool, especially with this client. So solar panels, like if we were doing that material design for Android, you could still make it okay. You can make it interesting. But when you're doing a video network and you get to apply these really, I think, well-designed guidelines around the transitions and animation, it's a lot more fun. So this is a great client to be able to explore material with.
I'm curious, when you get to work in material, because it's so interestingly thought out, and you move to other platforms, do you feel like you've stepped back into the past? We come from the future, now we have to go back into the past and do this stuff. Or is everything now in parity almost?
No, I see what you're saying. I was working on something today and I had to go back and look at the University of Texas iPhone app that I designed in 2009. And I had to pull up all the deliverables for it. And they're just... it's wireframes. There's like an app map, and then there's wireframes, and then there's all these flat files. And the direction that we've gone now is delivering interactive prototypes that embed the animation and the transitions.
Oh, so your design process has changed over the years.
Completely. Completely. You know, handing off a stack of flat wireframes or a PDF, and this is what the folks over in the responsive side of things have been saying for the past couple of years, that just doesn't cut it anymore. It doesn't communicate what our developers need to implement a good design. So we're trying out a bunch of different tools for animation, like Keynote has the magic shapes or magic spots, I can't remember what they call it, that lets you put animation in through Keynote. And there's a bunch of other tools out today that are really set up to allow you to add animation and transitions to your native prototypes.
So are you finding in the sort of native installed app world that designers who are afraid of coding are going to run into the same sort of problems that web designers who are afraid of coding are running into, which is that you have to have some basic prototyping and coding skills to be able just to communicate your intent. Otherwise, you're going to be left behind.
Well, I don't know. I have a number of people on my team who are not developers, and there is a large group of tools that have come out recently that are geared for designers who are not developers, that give them the flexibility and the features that they need to simulate the animations. So I don't think it's quite as detrimental as not understanding Bootstrap would be to a responsive web designer. So like there's this program out there called Pixate, P-I-X-A-T-E. And if you can use Photoshop or anything in Creative Suite, then you can use Pixate to plug in these animations. I think it's actually easier for folks who are designing native apps because the control set for iOS and the control set and animations for Android are, well, they're established and it's a discrete set. Whereas for mobile web, you could do anything, right? the sky is the limit. Whereas with Apple and Android, there's a good base to start with. It doesn't say that you can't ever create anything novel, but if you have these base controls and their interactions, it's a good playground to start working with.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm really looking forward to your workshop. I mean, it's going to be so interesting. And I have really not spent much time looking at designing for the native applications. And so I'm really excited about having the opportunity to dive deep and spend the time doing this. It sounds like you guys are putting together something really, really awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I'm going to start off and do, as you know, I'm doing the four-part workshop with you. And so to make sure that I've got all of the kinks worked out of it, I'm going to start giving little dry runs of it at the local incubators around town over the next couple of months.
Oh, fabulous. That's a great way to do it.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, Teresa, thank you so much for spending time talking to me today.
Well, thanks for having me. It was great.
Yeah, and if you guys who are listening would like to learn more about this, I highly recommend you go over to the UX Immersion website at uxim.co and you read all about her full-day workshop, Designing for the Brave New World of Native Apps, which she'll be giving in Salt Lake City. April 13th through 15th is when the conference will be, and she'll be doing an entire day on design for native apps. It's going to be so much fun. And of course, check out her website at strategyplusdesign.com. That's three words, strategyplusdesign.com. And also, if you haven't gotten your copy of the Mobile Design Pattern Gallery book from O'Reilly, it's a must-have book. And I'll give you a secret. If you go look at her website, there's like a code that saves you some money at the bottom of the page. Anyways, I love that book, and I love the work that you're doing, Teresa. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks, Jared.
And thanks to everyone for listening. And as always, thank you for encouraging our behavior. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
For more information about Teresa's and the other five workshops, visit uxim.co. That's uxim.co. As always, thanks for listening.